Hello everyone, my name is Joshua Gilliland. I am one of the bloggers on The Legal Geeks, and today we are doing a special Day of the Doctor discussion because, let's face it, all of us Whovians are still geeking out over what we saw over the weekend. And with me are two Doctor Who fans. One is our good friend, Judge Matthew Sherino in New York, and also Christina McDougall, who is an attorney at Morgan Lewis in intellectual property. Thank you for being with us today.
Thank you, Josh.
Yep, thank you very much.
It is a pleasure. So let's start talking Doctor Who. First off, for Christina, what did you think of Day of the Doctor?
I really enjoyed it. So having started Doctor Who with the reboot with Christopher Eccleston is when I first got involved about, I guess, 6 years ago, because a friend of my boyfriend at the time and now husband is a huge Doctor Who fan, goes to the Gallifrey conferences and is really big into it, got us into it. And so we've had a group that watches it every few months. And so getting to see the new characters combined with the old characters, I really enjoyed, because I'm much more familiar with the new Doctor Who than the old. But it actually made me really want to go back and start watching all of those. So now I've got that huge task ahead of me of 600 plus episodes. So, but I really enjoyed it, as I thought the story was great, but I also thought the special effects were incredible. Just really high quality, good storytelling, good special effects, good features, everything.
Judge Sherino?
I likewise liked it. In fact, the only down that I have is that that Christopher was not in it, other than maybe, you know, some graphical images. But I would have liked to have seen the War Doctor rejuvenate into him. And that's probably the only criticism I have of the entire show. I think the show was an amazing tribute. The way it really brought in every Doctor to the episode. And Steve Moffat, clearly a huge fan, I think did an amazing job giving homage to what made Doctor Who what it is today. And likewise, I came on with the reboot only this year, thanks to Netflix, and was able to catch up pretty quick. And I cheated on the old ones. I went to Wikipedia, read a lot of the synapses, and the BBC site also has some great synapses. And then I picked and choose a couple of episodes here and there to watch, like The Trial of the Time Lords, and Josh, you had recommended the Three Doctors, and so I picked and choose, because there's just too many of the classic ones to ever go back, and I really like the new ones better, but there are some great storylines in the old ones.
I agree. It's easier to watch the new, because when you're looking at stuff from the late 60s, 70s, and the budget that they had at the time to make it, the stories often move slow, but there are exceptions to that. I watched the, you know, recently found Patrick Troughton stories, Web of Fear and Enemy of the World, and those were a lot of fun. And, you know, Troughton often lists at the bottom of, like, favorite Doctors, and I think that's because a lot of his episodes are missing. But, I mean, he showed his acting chops in playing two different characters in one of them, and you know, it clicked along, and, you know, while everyone loves Sarah Jane Smith, rightfully so, I think Jamie is tied with her in the number of episodes that he appeared in. So, lots of good stuff out there with the old, but you have to deal with the low special effects, and they move slow, and all those, you know, other factors, but, you know, I'm a third Doctor fan myself. And the James Bond era of throwing guys over the shoulder, all that good stuff. Well, let's talk about one of the legal issues that I saw, I want to get your thoughts on, is, you know, we have, Stewart and the Zygons negotiate a treaty, and neither one remembers who's human or a Zygon. What's your thoughts on what that would do to treaty negotiations, which is ultimately a contract? And Christina, your thoughts?
So I've been thinking about this, and one of the biggest issues I have is that when you're negotiating, you always kind of think about what's your baseline what are you not willing to go below, and then try to get more than that whenever. So I've worked on licensing negotiations, and I've done some pro bono work as well in other fields. But you always kind of have your baseline set up, and you don't want to go below. You're not going to go below that. And then whatever you can get above it is icing on the cake. But if you don't know what your position is, it's really hard to have a where do you even start? I mean, if you're on one side, you want to preserve the earth. If you're on the humans, if you're the Zygon side, you want to take it over. I mean, how do you even, I'm not even sure where you would start the negotiations. I think it would wind up being whatever your personality type is. If you're, you know, more of a, it would come down to that. If you're more of a bleeding heart type or a more cutthroat type, and then, but it's really hard because where do you even start? That's my biggest issue with all of that.
Judge Farina?
And they're almost negotiating with themselves to some degree, because both sides are arguably each other. So and enforcement is such a terrible, terrible problem. And it's in most law of war type negotiation, might will make right, and it'll come down to the winning side will be able to enforce the terms of the contract as they deem them to have been before they won.
Yeah, and when the Zygons get their memories back, would they even still want to go for it? You know, would it actually be to their benefit at that point in time? Or are the humans to go, there's what, 12 of you and you're shapeshifters? Well, there's 6 billion of us. We can take you in a fight. So it's kind of that bothered me just a touch, just because of the enforcement and whether or not they were actually authorized to negotiate for each side. Now, granted, if the Zygons had shown up at Earth and gone, hey, 400 years ago, our planet was wiped out and we need a place to live, and here's this part of the desert that nobody likes, or here's something aquatic where no one can live, can we have that because we can adapt to it? You know, you think something like that would have made more sense, but that would have...
Or they could have placed them in District 9 or...
good homage. for all the geeks out there who go like, yeah, of course. That just perplexed me, just because of how do you deal with that? So... for contract law, how do you think that also plays in? You know, Christina, you hit it, you know, I think pretty accurate. But it's like trying to buy a car and both sides are the buyer type of.
Yeah, exactly. And the other issue is, what contract law would you be thinking about? Like, with, you know, we have a very defined idea of contract law, but other countries, even in the world, have different, very different ideas about laws. And, you know, with intellectual property, because we work on patents all over the world, I deal with this, the idea of harmonization and how do you comply with everybody's laws all the time. And just between humans, it's hard to comply. So, you know, aliens may have a very different, the Zygons may have a completely different idea of what they consider a contract, and what's important in a contract to them may be very, very different than what we would consider. So how would you, what kind of, which law would you even be basing your contract negotiation on?
Yeah, that's a tough one, because that also would imply that everybody in the room still understood what a Zygon contract law is. You know, when you get into, I might get this wrong because it's been a few years since law school, but I think it was France or Germany that had enforceable promises. We don't have that in the U.S. system, and I don't think they have that in the British system, since we have incorporated all of that. But It just turns negotiations on its head if you don't know who you're representing. Which, apologies to John Rawls, since that's the idea. It's a little weird. So, but let's talk about, I don't know, Christine, if you had a chance to see it, but I know the judge and I both enjoyed it, An Adventure in Time and Space. Did you get a chance?
I didn't.
I would encourage you to.
It's definitely, I have it on my iPad to watch, but I just haven't had a chance to watch it yet.
It really surprised me as to how good it was, and it really, you know, it tugs at your emotional cords. At the end, you really feel for the first doctor, and The actor who portrayed the first Doctor really, really did an amazing job. And I love him from Harry Potter days. And he was also great in Broadchurch. And it really, really, I think, captured that time period. And it was interesting with all of the TV exposure with regards to the 50th anniversary of the JFK assassination. That's the first show also debuted the night of the JFK assassination. And even though both anniversaries were happening together, I didn't make that connection in my head. And the show really brought home how, you know, people were watching TV because of the JFK assassination, even in England. And it kind of impacted the way the show came out. And those first couple episodes. And it was interesting to, you know, a lot of times when you study history, you study always this timeline, this timeline, this timeline, and you always forget where the timelines kind of mesh between all of the various histories. And it was very interesting. It was well done. Very, very good acting. Interesting to learn that the show's producer was a female, which was groundbreaking at that time, that the director of the first episode was an Indian, and also was groundbreaking, and the man who was willing to take the risk and go forward and wanted this sci-fi show for the kids, and how it really hit a nerve with British fans. And it's incredible just to see how Doctor Who goes through. I'm on a Netflix tan. I've been watching a lot of British sitcoms, and the amount of references to Daleks and other Doctor Who references that, you know, if I never watched Doctor Who, I would not get them in a million years. It's really amazing to see how Doctor Who really is a part of the British culture. And if you the amount of people that watched this episode there, it was three quarters of the country were watching this. And it might have even been more because they didn't have all of the movie stats in yet.
Yeah, basically, you shut down a country. And when you throw in 94 other ones partook, I mean, that's huge. I mean, people shut down to watch. I didn't do my usual Saturday activities because I was waiting. You know, I wouldn't go out and do anything else. And then you throw in, Monday night, I went to the 10 o'clock show at our local IMAX, picked a row, sat third from the front because I figured, hey, let's go for this. And unbeknownst to me, three seats over was two of my mock trial kids with one of the dads. And the dad had made himself a Tom Baker scarf. One of the girls was dressed as Osgood. I mean, scarf, lab coat. She had put that out on her Tumblr blog. And the BBC, reblogged it. And it had 5,000 reblogs. So if you looked at that one, that's one of my kids. And one of the other students was also dressed up. Doctor Who t-shirt and everything. And so it was neat. And like the theater, they had it in three theaters. The one I was in was about 75% to 80% full, in my estimation. And, you know, and people had already seen it. People there with sonic screwdrivers and, you know, just dressed up. I was cool. And we knew that everybody had seen it already. And they were cheering and having a rip-roaring good time. So I'm like, they literally united the planet. How often does that happen?
And got a Guinness Book World Record for doing so.
God bless them. I mean, I hope they can maintain it. It would be neat to, you know, have something like this again if they can figure out a way to sustain, you know, if it's biannual or something, just so people can look forward to it. Mm-hmm. But it's just, God bless them. They executed this with such precision and skill. I'm just in awe.
And I think with the Christmas episode coming up clearly at Christmas time, I think the amount of people that were into this, I think the Christmas episode will pick up new fans as people see this in the movies. And yeah, they always have to sustain it by having good quality shows. But it clearly was an amazing feat, and it tied everything together. BBC did a great job of tying in social media. The way they a new app came out today, Doctor Who Legacy Game. It's kind of a Candy Crush with a Doctor Who theme. You'll like it. And the sound effects are great. You got the TARDIS, you got all the Doctor Who sounds, and so it's and they keep doing this, and I think it's a great way to keep momentum. As long as the stories stay good, people will watch, and I have faith that the Christmas episode will also be spectacular. So it's definitely going up.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to the Christmas episode. I think it's going to be good. But it amazes me that something that's been going on for 50 years and it still has just this enormous following, and I think that's just incredible. How many things last for 50 years? I mean, think about technology and how many things change it, and the fact that, you know, some of these sci-fi shows have been going on for 40 and 50 years and still have huge turnouts at the theaters and huge fan bases all over the world is amazing to me. And it speaks to the quality and the really high level of work that people have put into it.
It's awe-inspiring. A short list. I mean, you have Doctor Who's is the standard bearer, I think, because it's 50 years. There's that, 12-year gap that we had. You then have Star Trek, and so we'll have that 50th anniversary very soon.
Soon.
And that stands in, you know, foot in TV with, you know, what, 7 series and the movies. And then you have Star Wars, which no TV presence because we don't want to talk about the Christmas special. But you have, I mean, like, that's generational, too. And, like, all of those shows, you know, have generational fans that, you know, I remember watching Doctor Who as a kid back when it wasn't cool, when liking Doctor Who was saying, I don't need to talk to girls and I'm okay not doing anything. To now being just universally beloved by the mainstream, to, you know, waiting in line to see Star Wars as a 5-year-old for Empire Strikes Back. So it's, you know, like that's with me, and you know, the judge has worked in a Star Wars reference into an opinion. No U.S. judge to date has worked in a Doctor Who reference.
Doctor Who's a little tougher. I mean, I think. I mean, you know, it's got to be the right situation, and there's not much time traveling issues that I've seen before me yet.
I could see somebody working in Exterminate. I could, you know, there are some...
Again, not a popular word with the judicial commissions, Exterminate.
True, but there's, I mean, the haunted house ones, I mean, there are a lot of really talented judges who, you know, were English majors and who are really good at alliteration and allusion and are able to work in those references. And, I mean, like, the number of Star Trek and Star Wars, you know, references are in the thousands, if I were combining both of them. So it's a matter of time before somebody, you know, does it. I mean, Harry Potter's made a couple appearances, and that was... Kaczynski's been one of those judges who's done that, but there'll be more. I mean, it's just, it's been in the theaters. Some judge took their kid or grandkid or their spouse loves it, and it's going to happen.
I think this 50th anniversary episode has a lot of good quotes that I think are going to make it over the next few years into the mainstream. There were some really, really good ones about, you know, men and being an honorable person and all throughout the whole episode. So I think we're going to be hearing a lot of those in the coming years. I hope, anyways.
I think you're right. It's just, you know, I watched it alone on Saturday and then in the theater, and then watching the lines that people responded to, characters that people responded to. I mean, there was a lot of love there. And so it's bound to happen. So let's talk a bit about, you know, personal preferences. So, Christina, your favorite doctor?
David Tennant. I'm a big David Tennant fan, and really the David Tennant Donna is my favorite of the pairings. I really like Donna and her character and how she evolved. Had a horribly sad ending, but but it had a really good evolution in that story arc. But yeah, David Tennant is my, even in the 50th anniversary, his lines and his character were my favorite. He had some great ones.
My brother and you would get along rather well. Your Honor, your favorite doctor?
I'm also in the David Tennant camp. I think he's just a phenomenal actor, and also loved him in the Broadchurch, and I hear they're making an American version of that, and there's rumors that he might even be part of it, so I'm looking forward to that as well. I also enjoy the way Matt Smith portrays the Doctor a lot. I think it kind of does a incredible job of that nutty professor, and it kind of harkens to the days of Tom Baker, and I can see him almost wearing the scarf, multicolored scarf. But David Tennant is probably my favorite one. I think the current companion did an amazing job in this episode. She wasn't my favorite. She's now fast becoming, at least in the top two as well. I also like the way they handled the Bad Wolf, and not bringing her back as herself, but just as the interface for the moment. I think was a masterful way of bringing her in, and I like Billy Piper, and I think she's probably my favorite companion, even though really not matched up with David all that much. I would have liked them to actually have been together for a little bit longer. And again, that was, again, another sad breakup. But I would say David Tennant and Billy are my favorite duo.
Yeah,
and I like the War Doctor more than I thought I was going to like the War Doctor.
It's John Hurt. I mean, John Hurt. How do you not like John Hurt? I'm like, talk about.
I didn't think he was going to have as big a role in the 50th anniversary. I kind of thought, you know, it would be some war scenes and then pressing the red button, and it really kind of surprised me in a good way as to how much of a part he had in the entire episode, because he really was great.
That's another thing I really liked about the episode overall, was having the three doctors, so much screen time with all three of them together, and the interaction of seeing, you know, the same person but at different stages in their life being together, the same, you know, the same soul, the same entity, and how they function and speak and interact with everybody else so differently based on their personal background and experiences, but they're all still fundamentally the same.
Which that is really not an easy feat to pull off.
No.
I mean, as a director, I mean, you know, we can get full geek to the Avengers movie, and it's really tough to have those kind of personalities, those kind of stellar actors, give up their egos and not be the focus themselves, but share that screen with other great actors, and it was really, really done in a masterful way.
I agree. You know, when you look at the other multi-doctor stories they've had in the past, when they did the three doctors, you know, it was just a couple years before Hartnell died, and so they had his role be very limited. So it was mostly just, you know, two and three on screen together. When you had the five doctors, Tom Baker refused to do it, since it was, you know, too soon after he left, and he didn't want to do it. And so they had him stuck someplace. And so it was the actor who stood in for Hartnell, I'm forgetting his name, Troughton, Pertwee, and Peter Davison, and they did a very nice job together, but it was, you know, they were missing one. Then the two doctors with, Colin Baker and Troughton. So at best, you know, we've only seen four at once, and that was just for a brief part of the five doctors. But this was, they did a really nice Three Caballeros type feel to it, and I was really impressed with her. You know, I really like David Tennant. I'm quite fond of Matt Smith, and I initially wasn't. I thought, like, he's 26, or you get it. And then watched the first episode and went, I like him. And he does that quirky, aloof, arrogant, brave character very well, and I'll miss him. But I'm really looking forward to 12. So
now, is he 12 or is he 13?
I was just going to ask that.
Yeah, well, because again, the meta crisis, and like I pointed this out, that, you know, there was the rogue regeneration to the hand, and you know, the stolen Earth, and so like that was a regeneration, and so we'll see how they spin that I know there's the mystery woman who's supposed to be in the Christmas special now, and some people are thinking she's the Ronnie, but I'd put money on it's Susan and the granddaughter, because why just leave her floating around out there? So we'll see. Granted, I could be rather wrong, but
you've had a pretty good track record with your guesses so far.
You know, when I blogged about the three doctors, I was right. They would show how he used the moment to end the Time War. So I got that one and felt good about that. And I was right with Capaldi. But we'll see. Susan would make sense. That'd be a nice tip of the hat to, you know, the past. And I can't help but wonder, when River saved the doctor at the end of Let's Kill Hitler, that jump started or added some lives to them. So we'll see how they spin that. But
yeah, I don't think they're necessarily going to be tied to the 13th as the final rejuvenation, because you can work your way around that. But just as pure numbering, I think at this point, you know, you got to call Peter the 13th, even though the other guys don't want to give up their numbers necessarily. You know, it's like having your jersey number. You don't want to give up the number you've fallen in love with. But, you know, the War Doctor clearly has redeemed himself and you know, stands amongst the other doctors.
Yeah, it's
I was just going to say, at the end of the episode, when they're doing the panning around the big table and the big fight scene, and they've got all the doctors' faces flashing from all the doctors in history, they do refer to Peter Capaldi as the 13th, and they show his face, just this part of his face. It flashed
just
by.
Just the eyes, second. Those great
just
eyes.
Just the eyes, yeah, and I caught that. I'm not sure I caught it the first time around, but I definitely caught it the second time. So they did hint at him being called the 13th. So.
And a couple of interviews with Moffat in the last week seems to indicate that as well, that the doctor is a doctor. You know, David doesn't want to give up his number, and Matt Smith doesn't want to give his number, but that the War Doctor is a doctor and is one of the 13 rejuvenations, and that this Peter is the 13th rejuvenation. But like anything else, whatever the masses call him, it will be what he'll be known as.
There was a great Neil Gaiman today that I saw tweeted, and I retweeted it as well, that where he said, if people get into fights about this, that they have really sad lives and they just need to calm down and to treat them with compassion. So.
Well, there will be forums at conventions devoted to
counting of the doctors.
The counting of the doctors, exactly.
It's like, let it go. The way I'm working it out is I'm just calling them the War Doctor, and thus keeping the numbering sequential after that.
That's what I'm doing in my head, too.
It's just because, like, the full-blown renumbering could be a little chaotic, or saying, you know, 11, but he's really 12. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is the stuff lawyers care about, because, damn it, we got to be accurate. we have to be accurate. So finally, final question for both of you is, you know, hope for the future. What do you want to see in the coming series? And Christina, you know, what's your hope?
I mean, I'm hoping to see more of the storyline about the searching for Gallifrey. I hope that's where they go. I really like the twist at the end, where they wound up, instead of, you know, they all came together, and there was the whole theme running from when she's first writing on the blackboard with the Arrhenius. Was that the philosopher's quote about stop arguing about being a good man and just be a good man? And that theme went through the whole episode. And then at the end, having the three of them around the button debating whether to push it. And that came back to me when I rewatched it, that, oh yeah, that's what they're doing. They're sitting there and they're arguing about, what should we do? How do we be good people? And then they're like, hey, let's just stop arguing about it and fix this problem and, you know, do the good thing. So I really liked how that got turned around, and that the doctor didn't wind up having to destroy his entire planet. And so I'm hoping that gets explored more. The thing that I'm a little bit worried about is how they're going to deal with the fact that some of the doctors, that the newest doctor is going to remember what happened, but the other ones don't, and how that'll factor back in, and the crossing of all the different timelines, because it really, him destroying the planet really made him the doctor that he is now. and it really shaped his views on how to deal with civilizations and going forward, how to deal with these problems and to try to find the path that doesn't lead to destruction and find, you know, the best path for everybody going forward. And if the timelines aren't kept separate, how would that come back and affect him going forward? So that's my biggest concern, but I look forward to hearing more about the him saving Gallifrey in the coming, and searching for Gallifrey and how that goes, because I can imagine there's probably going to be a lot of adventures along that path of trying to figure out where it is. So,
Your Honor?
Likewise, and I think, Christina, you had a great name for a future episode with the counting of the Doctor. I think that could actually be a pretty good name there. I'm looking forward to learning more about Gallifrey, and some of the war scenes raised a lot of questions in my head. So you saw the kids running and the soldiers, and you, in the older episodes, every time that you showed Gallifrey, it was just, you know, 10 or 12 Time Lords in a room. To think that there were non-Time Lord Gallifreyans on the planet kind of changes my view of the planet, and it's going to be interesting to learn a little bit more about how that planet operates. And likewise, I'm also just curious as to the Peter character and his return to Pompeii, and because Moffat has kind of promised a way that makes sense to show how he was both in Torchwood and in Pompeii in such a way that will be a plausible story. And what that plausible story is, I'm very, very curious about.
I think they're going to reference Enemy of the World, because in that, you know, the second Doctor faces a dictator who looks exactly like him. So they've already addressed this, that happens, that the Doctor can resemble other people in history, or, you know, and when you look at the sixth Doctor, you know, Colin Baker played a guard in one of the fifth Doctor adventures. And so, you know, you get this before that, maybe he just liked the face and wanted to honor it, or they'll work it in some way, but it's nice that to hear that they're actually thinking about it, and, you know, God bless them for doing that.
On the repeat faces thought, what do you think of Baker? Do you think he's a future Doctor, a different Time Lord altogether, the past Doctor who got old?
Christine, do you want to go first? Or?
Sure. I've been thinking a lot about the Baker at the end, as well as the moment, and, you know, the moment Rose, Bad Wolf, you know, what is she? And I'm not sure. I'm not sure if he's something that the Doctor's remembering, or if he is a different character. I'm kind of leaning towards him being the moment. I like that.
I read that today, and I agree with that theory too.
I like that he's the moment that's coming back to kind of give the Doctor hope that what they did actually worked, and so that, you know, he knows that, okay, we did change, we did make a difference. But the other thing I liked about the way they did it is a lot of shows, when they do a reboot and a significant change like that in a critical moment, they change everything going forward. And here they did the complicatedness with the timeline so that really only the current Doctor is going to know what happened. And so, you know, we haven't destroyed everything going up to it. It's just changing him going forward, which I thought was an interesting, I'm not quite sure all the ramifications of that, but I thought that was an interesting way they did that. But yeah, I'm leaning towards Peter Capaldi being the a second incarnation of the moment. At the end.
You mean Tom Baker?
Yeah, sorry, Tom Baker.
Yeah, I agree. I think he was the moment. I agree with that. Even though the idea that the Doctor is recycling some of his favorite faces, that also could make sense as well, especially if you're now in double digits and you're over 2,000, it's like, I was happy as this guy. I'm going to go back. And we also learned in Night of the Doctor, regeneration doesn't have to be completely random. So there's that as well. So I agree with both of you with finding Gallifrey, because I think that would give back a spirit of adventure that, I mean, the 2005 reboot through now has been beautiful, and the survivor's guilt and everything has been well done, and the mystery has been very good. But when the show began, it was about getting back home. you know, and that was one of the things discussed in Unearthly Child. And then we started learning more about the Time Lords as the series went on. I like the idea of getting back that optimism that the Doctor didn't have to kill everyone in order to save the day. And that seems a very un-Doctor thing to do, because he normally finds a way to solve the problem. So I like that focus. I'll put my cards on the table. Everyone who wants the Doctor to regenerate in a woman, I don't agree with. I think it would destroy the show, because it's about an old dude, grandpa, who goes around saving the day.
It has been done, though. There have been regenerations. Cars and Dax to Jadzia Dax in DS9, and that worked pretty well. But I agree with you. I'm not sure about Doctor Who that it would work. As much as I would like to see it, part of me, I agree that I'm not sure it's the...
And here's the other theory that I have. You have the Doctor's daughter from the episode entitled The Doctor's Daughter that David Tennant had married when she was actually Peter Davidson's daughter, which is a little weird, but anyway. You have her character, and you also had Susan. So, you know, you have women, Time Lords, that you could do this with, that you could have, you know, adventures around them. And so you don't need to completely rechange the series in one big of a roll of the dice, because if it backfires, you destroy the series. So I would say go with the option you already have. There are two women already related to the Doctor that you could have adventures around, because with the passing of Elizabeth, Slayton on, you know, Sarah Jane Smith Adventures, we're missing something there, and they could, you know, fill that void, because there should be, you know, another storyline going on that I think that would be very good. So that's my hope for the future, because I would like to see, you know, Lady Time Lords, and I think that'd be a good way to do it.
What about a male companion for Peter?
I think that's necessary, because it's been, you know, I you want the male-female ratio, but I would look back to the second Doctor with, you know, Jamie and Zoe, or the third Doctor where you had Sarah Jane and the Brigadier. So the Doctor needs some male buddies, and because Rory didn't quite fit it. You know, it was kind of this weird competition with Amy that was going on, and it'd be nice to actually see the Doctor with a wingman.
Plus, he was very plastic, Rory.
Yeah, literally. literally. And it's like, really, you lived 2,000 years and that didn't do anything to your personality? I mean, you didn't read or study anything during that time? But that's just character analysis. But I would like to see a male companion in addition to Clara. You know, that's, the three-person story, I think, works well. And I think that'd be nice to actually to do that again.
As another plug for Broadchurch, Rory plays the actor who plays Rory plays the priest in Broadchurch, and really, really is good in that role too.
Yeah, I was, when they, you know, eliminated the pawns, you know, there was the, you know, the second goodbye that they didn't film, but Arthur Danville did the reading for of the letter to his dad that Amy and Rory's adopted son delivers. And the storyboards for that would have been very tear-jerking, would have been nice, and I do wish they had filmed that, so they could have had closure to that loop. But yeah, I think Danville's is a great actor, but I think the Doctor needs a wingman. Christina, your thoughts?
I think it would definitely be interesting. I think they've done really well with the companion, with the his companions in the reboot anyways, being very different and bringing their own personal characteristics. So I think that having a male companion would definitely add to that and bring in a different, you know, a different element and just bring in some different ideas. And it would be more of a wingman situation than a lot of the companions. It's almost like a crush on the Doctor situation. Not all of them, but a lot of them. And so I think that would add, although there could be a male with a crush too, you never know, anything's possible. I do think that it would add a different style. And I think it would be interesting to do.
Yeah. And anyway. I mean, I mean, they tried with Captain Jack, who did have a crush. But, you know, it would be nice. I'd like to see a Jamie-esque or a Brigadier-type character again. Or an Adric, even though he did get on people's nerves. But, you know, it'd be nice to see something like that, because it's worked with other doctors. Mm-hmm. And it would just be nice to not have this, like, you know, girl infatuation with the doctor, especially since, you know, the 13th is a bit older and just be creepy, you know, with, like, the 20-something and the 50-year-old. So I would hope they don't do that.
If they could do some kind of combination similar to the, you know, the David Tennant, Matt Smith, I really liked, I liked all three of the doctors with John Hurt in the episode, but I also really liked the David Tennant, Matt Smith when they were together. They played off of each other really well. Their comments were really fun back and forth. So it'd be nice to have a companion that was in sort of that realm that, you know, was really, you know, really intelligent, really witty, and, you know, able to banter with the doctor. And I think that would be an interesting way to go with either a male or female companion. But
well, they've had the spunky women, you know. I mean, like Donna, who probably is my favorite of modern companions. I mean, Catherine Tate, I mean, like, just snarky and adorable at the same time. Just loved her in it. Like, listen, space boy. I mean, it's just, I mean, that's good. You know, and I did like Captain Jack too, even though that there were times when Russell T. Davies over-sexualized the show because of that. So, but again, just having that buddy, that wingman, you know, and if it's somebody like the Brigadier, or if it's somebody like Jamie, I think that's a good model to have in a companion for the next Doctor. So anyway, this has been tons of fun. Any other hopes, dreams, what you want to see?
I'm just curious if it's going to be the gap between the Christmas show and then the next episodes. I have a feeling it might be very substantial.
I think it's March is what I read, but I think it's springtime. And that's what they've done in the past. But yeah, that's a long 3 months to wait.
And as someone who's never had to wait for the episodes, in as much as they've always been on demand, as I've wanted to watch them, it's different having to wait for them.
I mean, via iTunes or Netflix, you know, look back at some of the older ones, because they, you know, iTunes has a bunch now.
And Netflix has hundreds of them as well, but
there's a lot there, and so I would explore 2 and 3. Even though I'm wearing the fourth Doctor scarf, I actually got a little tired of Tom Baker. And, you know, my era was Peter Davidson and Colin Baker. And I always felt Colin Baker got the short end of the stick because he didn't get to play the character the way he wanted to. His Doctor was kind of mean. The only Doctor that I know of that killed somebody with his bare hands. And so if you want to talk about breaking the promise, 6 did it. And the fact that with the behind the lens that they did, that Colin Baker narrated that, I thought was a nice tribute to him personally to give him that, because he probably loved the role more so than all the original Doctors did, because he grew up with it and he really, you know, he loved it, and he didn't get to play it the way he wanted to. So anyway, that's my hope that we'll for things to see. So with that, Christina, you know, Your Honor, thank you so much. We'll get to see Silence Will Fall on December 20th, and let's see if it's Susan or somebody else.
They really should have called it Silent Night. I think they missed an opportunity there.
I agree.
That would have been appropriate for the season.
You know, they've been really good with everything. So.
And I didn't come up with it. I read it on some blog somewhere the other day. So it was just, and I was like, yeah, that would have been a really good title.
You know, I still love the Christmas Carol the most, the Matt Smith one. So that's my, they had that one appropriately named. So with that, good evening, everyone. Thank you for tuning in and stay geeky. Oh, and vote for the legal geeks in the fourth button category of Blog 100. So thank you all.